Hello, and welcome back to the 75th Ranger Regiment IT Innovators Podcast. Today's interview is with the Network Cross-Functional Team Director, Major General Pete Gallagher. Major General Gallagher is a career signal officer who has served in multiple special operations units. The Army's Network Cross-Functional Team is one of 8 cross-functional teams established by Army Futures Command to tackle the service's modernization priorities. Its task is to narrow capability gaps in the Army's Mission Command Network through user experimentation, assessments, and technical demonstrations. In today's episode, we explore the future of Army communications, networks, and multi-domain operations. Thank you for listening. Rangers lead the way.
At dawn on the morning of the 6th of June, 1944, 225 Rangers ran to the bottom of these cliffs, and the American Rangers began to climb.
Today, we have done what we had to do. If necessary, we shall do it again. He counted on America to be passive. He counted wrong.
Sir, thank you for being on the podcast with us in season one. How are you this morning?
Hey, I'm doing great, and it's an honor to be up here and representing the Army's Futures Command and supporting the 75th Ranger Regiment. Thanks for the opportunity.
Thank you, sir. Let's start off by briefly touching on Army Futures Command and what are the cross-functional teams?
Yeah, so back in the fall of 2017, the Army rolled out its 6 modernization priorities about a month later, they rolled out 8 cross-functional teams, of which the network was one of those, and I was selected at the time to lead the Army Network Cross-Functional Team. About a year later, Army Futures Command stood up as our higher headquarters, and it's really about the need to modernize the Army to keep pace with the changing world. The changing character of war, as General Milley would put it. Post-Cold War, U.S. dominance has faded over the years. We've been in a couple decades now of counterinsurgency, counterterrorism fight across the greater Middle East and across the globe, actually. And I know the 75th Ranger Regiment has been there from day one when they jumped into Rhino shortly after 9/11. I was part of that task force when General Joe Votel led the Ranger Regiment into that first night, 1920, October 2001. And the regiment has been deployed ever since. And so understanding that peer adversaries have gone to school on how we do what we do and the ways we do it. And there's been a lot of threats emerging over time. And Army senior leaders figured out is we got to do something different. We got to do something different in this era of great power competition and in order to modernize the Army. And so they created the top 6 modernization priorities. It's about how are we going to be able to shoot, move, communicate, and protect the force better than we can and against a peer adversary where we are going to be contested. We're going to be contested in every domain. And so General Milley, Secretary Esper, General McConville, and Secretary McCarthy, they were shoulder to shoulder on this approach and rolled out those 6 modernization priorities and established Army Futures Command, which I think has probably been the biggest reorganization in the Army since probably the early 70s, since 1973. And so it's really big deal. Army, there was a lot of support from Congress, but there's also a lot of antibodies out there. And it's about how we deliver capability to address emerging threats to get the Army, to make the Army the most lethal fighting force in the world. And that's really what Army Futures Command was established to do. It was established in July of 2018. And really the focus is leading perpetual modernization, which means we are never done. We're going to constantly modernize this Army with emerging technology to counter the evolving threats that face our nation. And that's what it's all about. And cross-functional teams are an important component of that Army modernization effort and the Army Futures Command. And I'm one of 8, but the CFTs are not the only aspect of Army Futures Command. You've also got what used to be ARCIC and TRADOC is now part of Army Futures Command, the Future Concepts Center, which is really looking at the concepts of how we're going to fight in a multi-domain operation or joint all-domain environment. And then you've got what used to be called Research and Development Engineering Command, which is now called the Combat Capabilities Development Command. They're up here at Aberdeen Proving Ground. They manage all of the science and technology efforts across the entire Army. Army Research Laboratory, all of the labs that support all the warfighting functions, they're spread, they're a global command based out of Aberdeen here, but they are now a part of Army Futures Command. They used to be part of Army Materiel Command. So you had, you know, the sustainment community of really the folks looking long and deep in how we were going to try to fight concepts in the future. And so you've got the concepts, you've got the science and technology experts, and inside the cross-functional teams, you have kind of a truly cross-functional organization, very small teams, laser focused on those modernization efforts, really pulling the rest of the team of teams together. Okay, that's what we do. We drive the transition of technology. We drive the development of requirements with our TRADOC counterparts and our warfighting units. We're really at speed, and that's what we're trying to do, is capture kind of what's the emerging threat, what's the emerging technology, how do we define requirements that are going to address those threats, and then roll out with either our science and technology or industry partners the technology that's going to fit in our network design goals in the future. And that's really what we're trying to do. Is in the old days, there was it took years to get a requirement through the process, and then took years to go develop the technology to address that requirement, years to field it across the Army. And by the time it got fielded, you were addressing yesterday's threat with yesterday's technology and fighting, and the soldiers weren't getting what they needed to fight and win and maintain overmatch. So we're trying to change the paradigm there, and that's really what this is all about.
Hey, sir, that was a phenomenal answer, and I feel like that's going to be played in every S-Bolic and S-CCC from here on out as the vignette to start a class and really get a discussion going. So thank you for that, and also the Ranger history that you described at the beginning. And I think relevant for junior officers who have come into the force in the past 24 months who may have missed the modernization priorities or the inception of the network CFT, but what makes the CFT construct different? And what are CFTs doing to be different than what Army modernization efforts in the past have tried to do?
Yeah, so I think the most important thing I think that makes us different is we've been empowered by Army senior leaders to actually pull everybody together and drive outcomes at speed, and they support us, right? So, in the past, you've had the Army Acquisition Executive kind of under the authority of the Secretary, and by law, the authority to go acquire capability. What Army Futures Command has created for the Army is a 4-star green tab commander that's really ends up kind of taking the authorities of the Chief of Staff of the Army, and through a command relationship and through the cross-functional teams, we've kind of created this battle buddy approach between the cross-functional teams and our acquisition parts to deliver at speed and deliver with more precision of what the Army really needs. And I think it's an institutional change that's really made at the highest level a lot bigger than the network, but the network touches all of it, right? And so the whole construct of the Army developing CFTs to execute the top priorities of the Army and to really enable lethality of our warfighting force is significant. It's different because it brings together under one command kind of all the future planning, the concept development, and then laser focus on those modernization efforts. As I mentioned, the Chief and the Secretary are really the battle buddies at the top that are driving that, which makes a difference. And because they've empowered us as leaders and they underwrite some of the risks, because we're assuming some risk as we move out, we're moving out and drawing fire and trying to get stuff done. But we lay out and try to mitigate those risks and make sure that Army senior leaders understand what risk they are managing and taking as we try to address the threats. I think another thing that I talked about a little bit before, but what makes this cross-functional teams different is it's just not, we just don't have people we bring on and they get assigned to the team. We actually go out and seek experts from across the force. Experts from the operational community, from the requirements community, from the acquisition community, the test and evaluation community, and the science and technology community, and try to pull this group of folks that may not normally work together. And it's a very eclectic and the most diverse organization I've ever led in my life, and the diversity is not only basically I've got, you know, it's gender diversity, it's race diversity, but more importantly, it's diversity of talent and diversity of thought. And it's amazing when you pull a team like this together, a very eclectic group with a common goal to deliver the best possible capability for the Army, how inspiring it can be for those folks and how they come into work every day, even when they're virtually working during COVID, and they bring that positive energy every day to the workspace. It's pretty exciting.
So that's awesome. And it's kind of like the Ranger Regiment where you go through the selection process and every Ranger here wants to be here and improve the organization. And it seems like Network CFT is just the same. And now let's get to the $1 million.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
We don't have the 8 weeks of Ranger Assessment and Selection Program. We don't put them through RASP, but yeah, that's a good point, though.
Maybe next year, sir. And now for the $1 million question. What does the Network CFT actually do? What is the mission, and why Army Networks?
What do we do? Okay, well, I think we're really about driving the requirements process to make sure that the requirements as written are going to deliver the capabilities that we actually truly need. And that hasn't always been the case in the past. And typically in the past, the requirements would get generated and started at either Fort Gordon or Fort Leavenworth. And it would be well-meaning individuals kind of, they would belabor and write these very intricate requirements in a very detailed fashion and very technically specify capabilities that may not allow freedom of action or freedom of maneuver for industry to actually deliver technology that's going to meet those requirements. And sometimes we outsmarted ourselves as an Army by the way we did that. And we're trying to make sure that we have enough operational language in there to attack the problem we're trying to solve and then give the acquisition community and industry freedom of action to deliver capabilities that's going to address that problem. So there's an art to doing it that way. You got to be precise enough, but not overly precise to where you box yourself in. And so I think driving requirements is one big aspect of it. The other is driving transition of technology, which is on the other end of the spectrum. And so between driving requirements and driving the transition of technology, whether it's industry research and development or the science and technology efforts from the labs, the way you do that is you got to get soldiers and you got to get feedback and you got to get the capability in the hands of units and put it through its paces, either in a combat training center rotation or a warfighter exercise, you know, mission command training program where you get division and corps staffs out there putting some of this mission command technology through its paces and get that feedback loop generated so we can run what's called the industry practice of DevSecOps, where you get the developers, you get, you know, security baked in, and you really get the operator feedback, and you constantly iterate and improve as you go. And having the test community joined at the hip with this is important as well, because we got to be able to test things, we got to be able to fix based on the feedback loop, then we got to go test it again, and you got to have an iterative approach to doing how we do what we do, and that has not always been the case either. And in some cases, you know, the test apparatus was so long and so expensive, and by the time you got your test report, you've been through multiple iterations of software and you've already solved the problem, you know, in spades. And so what we're trying to work through is how do we get the institution to move at a pace that it's uncomfortable with while we're driving the requirements process. And it's really about driving the transfer and the delivery of technology, though, on the other end of it, to make sure that we, in the old days, they used to call it the valley of death, where the science and technology community or the research and development community would do great initiatives, but it would never result in a transition of technology. And so they would spend money, they would spend time, and they would come up with this great solution that nobody was prepared to catch it and get it integrated into the design goals. And that's what we've been spending a lot of our effort and energy on is what are those design goals for our capability sets over time, and how do we ensure that we've got alignment between those science and technology efforts and the actual program executive officer that's going to deliver it. I think that's what makes us different.
Sir, I was reviewing Network CFT slides and I saw that you had your deputy director was an infantry 06. I think it's a great call.
Yeah.
I think it's a great, great build. But can you describe that and what thought went into making that an infantry officer?
Well, it wasn't by design that it had to be an infantry officer, but the one thing when we first stood up the cross-functional teams, at the time, General Murray was the G8 of the Army, and he and I had a conversation about between General Murray and myself, and General Abrams at the time was at Forcecom, and we discussed, you know, making sure that I was teamed up with a maneuver or fires and effects officer, somebody that we could, you know, that would be my deputy that had credibility in the operational force. Not that I don't, because I believe I do, but it's making sure that we have a former brigade commander with street cred across Forcecom and across the Army Service Component Commands is going to come in and allow us to, you know, again, focus on it from a maneuver commander's perspective. Okay, I got a lot of experience as a signal officer, a lot of experience in a conventional soft environment, but what I don't have is that maneuver commander and the frustration of not having the capability I need to fight with the network and the mission command tools. And what Colonel Ryan, my deputy, brings to the table is vast experience in the Joint Special Operations Command and the Ranger Regiment. He's been in organizations where he's been on the halves, you know, where he's had tremendous technology and been able to leverage the power of the National Mission Force. He's also been in units on the edge of the supply pipeline, leading a maneuver brigade combat team in the 25th Infantry Division, where he wasn't necessarily the first unit equipped with some of the, you know, emerging technology. So he's had to make do. And so having that perspective and somebody that provides that intellectual sanity check on the capability we're delivering, is it going to meet the needs of that maneuver commander, is absolutely critical for us. And that's what I you know, being teamed up with a battle buddy like that makes a huge difference.
Hey, sir, that makes sense. It's Captain Cho here. Next question for you. What are the priorities or lines of effort for your organization?
Yeah, so we really have four, okay, and the threat is driving our lines of effort. The first one is what we call unified network, but if you think about, it's about network transport. And I talked about our ability to fight and win in a contested environment. We got to assume that we're going to be contested in space and we're going to be contested in spectrum. So we got to deliver network capabilities that allow us to operate in a contested environment. So line of effort one is about ensuring we have assured network transport in a contested environment against a peer adversary. And so we got to be able to counter electronic warfare threats, and we got to be able to counter the cyber threats. And that's everything from our space layer, leveraging space for satellite connectivity. It's an aerial tier that allows us to have beyond line of sight capability. And it's our terrestrial layer, which leveraging advanced networking waveforms and our ability to connect, you know, line of sight and beyond line of sight. So that's really line of effort number one. Line of effort number two is what we call the common operating environment. And that's really about our compute, our storage, our applications. It's the systems that ride over that network transport that allow speed of decision making. And so if you think about, in order to fight, you gotta operate inside of an OODA loop, or the ability to observe, orient, decide, and act at a pace faster than your adversary. But we owe our soldiers and we owe our warfighting commanders the tools that allow them to do that, okay? And that's really gonna be decision-making tools, or it's really apps on the edge, whether it's in a command post, in a mounted platform, in a dismounted formation, or even a wearable and some squad that might have a next generation set of goggles. They need tools at their disposal that are gonna allow them to make decisions at speed. And that's what common operating environment is all about. The third line of effort is making sure that everything we do as an Army, we know we're gonna fight as part of a joint force, and we're gonna have to be accessible to our coalition teammates. So joint and coalition interoperability cannot be an afterthought. It has to be baked into everything we do in LOEs 1 and 2. But we call it out specifically as an LOE because the Army has to make some investments. Because typically we operate on SIPR or NIPR, but what we found after, again, 20 years of war here, is we gotta fight as a coalition, and we gotta make sure that the technology, as much as we wanna evolve and deploy emerging technologies, we also gotta make sure that we can be accessible to our coalition teammates. And so we're trying to make sure that we can deliver a mission partner environment that allows us to operate at a secret releasable level at the right echelon, and also sometimes at the secure but unclassified level at the lowest tactical echelon, so we can communicate with all of our unified action partners, you know, whether they're joint or coalition teammates. And then the last line of effort is less about comms and it's more about infrastructure. It's the mobility and survivability of our command posts. After, you know, again, 20 years of war operating in a counterterrorism and counterinsurgency environment, we've been operating in many cases at a sanctuary in the combat zone, whether that's a forward operating base, intermediate staging base, or a combat outpost. In many cases, it's a building or a tent or a mud hut where you've got all the comms infrastructure and everything's all set, and you've got server stacks and Cat5, and you've got cable running all over the place. In a very aggressive, very mobile, very lethal fight against an adversary where you've got to jump your command post, you know, every 30 minutes to an hour just to survive, we got to have platforms that are appropriate for the formations that can keep pace. And those platforms have to be equipped with infrastructure that allows maneuver commanders the ability to stay connected. And so that's what line of effort four is. So it's really four LOEs. One's about transport, one's about the decision-making tools, the third one's about interoperability with all the other unified action partners, and then the fourth one's about, you know, the mobility and survivability of our command posts.
That's awesome, sir. And you know, I think it's great that all of those are oriented towards the actions that our adversaries are taking. You know, having heard all of those challenges that you outlined, what would you say is the number one challenge of the network cross-functional team today?
I think the scale of the Army and balancing, you know, the best capability we can deliver with affordability, okay? Because the Army is so big. And so if we try to field everybody in the Army, everything all at once, there's no way the Army could foot the bill. And so balancing kind of who gets what over time and managing emerging technology in an approach where we can deliver iterative capabilities over time is something we determined we had to do. So we created you know, a capability set fielding approach, which will allow us to ensure that, you know, as we're what we're fielding and what we're prototyping today and we field next year as part of CAT 21 continues to evolve. And so we can onboard emerging technology by capability set 23 or advanced technology by CAPE set 25. And so I think the importance is being able to keep pace with emerging threats and really and all those IT technology trends, because technology is evolving and we don't want to be left behind.
I think that's an excellent point you're talking about here, sir, in that it's managing the resources that you have to provide to the entire Army. As you know from your time in this community, sometimes we have access to emerging technology faster than conventional forces. What is the relationship between the network cross-functional team and the SOF community, the Ranger Regiment, compared to the conventional Army?
Yeah, so there's a reason why I handpicked some of my teammates from the special operations community. I think there's a reason why I was selected to lead this cross-functional team by the Army senior leaders based on some of my background and experience. There's a lot of goodness in what the special ops community, how they operate, why they're funded through a special set of funding and acquisition processes in order to do things different. And, you know, I think you all have heard the term Abrams Charter, and the 75th Ranger Regiment, really the charter of Abrams, Creighton Abrams back in the day, was the technology and TTPs and everything that evolves from the cutting edge fighting force has to be shared with the rest of the Army. And so you guys operating in the 75th Ranger Regiment have an obligation to give back. And I know you also established some of your tactics and procedures from some of the other special mission units. Not unlike tactics, we got to do the same with technology. And that's one of the big things that we've not always done well at as an Army. Sometimes the Army would go down its own path on technology and wouldn't necessarily flight follow the emerging technology and capability development inside the special ops community. From day one, we've tried to do that. I went down and met with SOCOM. I tried to figure out that one of the first steps I made was down to visit their PEO and their J6, and went down to USASOC and met with my counterparts down at U.S. Army Special Operations Command to see what they're doing. Where are they going with research and development? Where are they going with, you know, radios? A lot of what we're doing with our mesh network and the integrated tactical network was because we partnered with Special Operations Community, tried to kind of see what are other folks doing and how are we going to communicate when we share battle space, because that's the most critical aspect of not only assured communications, but we got to be able to communicate with our joint teammates and our Army teammates that are working as part of a joint task force, like a joint special operations task force, for example. And so I think the relationship I've established with USOCOM and with USASOC is pretty solid. A lot of it's just, you know, it's grounded in relationships and background, but it's also, I think, you know, through TTPs. We've had USASOC and we've had some of the special mission units up to visit us a few times at Aberdeen. We spent some time down on the ground at Fort Bragg and also at MacDill Air Force Base, and really trying to compare notes and share ideas.
So you mentioned mesh radios, and that kind of gets into the integrated tactical network conversation piece. And that's, I know that's a major focus of your network modernization efforts. And for the Ranger Regiment, our variants of the ITN is a major focus for the regiment. Obviously, it's slightly different, but can you explain what the ITN is and why that's a game changer?
Yeah, so the integrated tactical network is a combination of program of record systems and non-developmental items and commercial off-the-shelf capabilities that allow us to integrate the network better on echelon. And so it's an integrated set of components. It's designed to provide flexible, resilient capability for our maneuver formations and really provide accessibility to joint and coalition teammates. And it's not a new network, but it is new waveforms. It's additional transport, which gives us what we would call a PACE plan, primary, alternate, contingency, and emergency. It's trying to provide maneuver commanders with multiple options to connect. We've got advanced networking waveforms. We've got end user devices that are optimized with tactical kit decision-making tools to augment and improve, you know, decision-making on echelon, okay? And we're constantly trying to evolve that, and we want to stay connected with where 75th and the rest of the special ops community is going with that. I think it's game-changing, just based on the feedback. And I know one of your battalion commanders actually got us started. Rob McChrystal was actually before he was a Ranger battalion commander, he was a battalion commander in the 82nd. And a lot of this started on the grounds of the 1st Battalion 508 in the 82nd, where we were just experimenting with some ideas. He took his battalion through a CTC rotation at the Joint Readiness Training Center and provided some pretty amazing feedback on just the game-changing situational understanding. And we've tried to roll that out at scale in a much broader form, taking a lot of lessons learned from soldier feedback and a variety of touch points and a variety of exercises, and really evolved an idea into what we're calling the integrated tactical network.
Sure, that's a great answer. And really part of this podcast, its purpose, is to get the message out. And it's amazing how many signalers, communicators I talk to and ask them about mobile ad hoc networks, MANET, ITN, and across the board, those topics, and they're really just unfamiliar. So one of our main purposes here is to get the message out on what that is, and I understand that is getting filtered across the Army, one BCC at a time. So we really look forward to that across the conventional Army. But sticking with the tactical theme, what are other new technologies that you're looking at and what you want to incorporate in the next few years?
Yeah, so we're looking at ways to push data out at the appropriate levels, and you know, whether it's, like I said, down to that soldier in a squad with a wearable or somebody on a mounted platform. What we want to make sure is we don't have to lug around big server stacks everywhere we go, that we've optimized kind of our ability to leverage cloud computing where it makes sense, and then optimize our edge computing with always factoring in the size, weight, and power requirements that, you know, on echelon. I think we're also working to with the S&T teammates, science and technology teammates, to figure out how do we, in a contested environment, how can we maybe if we can't completely reduce our signature, how can we hide our signature, maybe operate in plain sight some way, leveraging things like decoys or remote antenna strategies, different kinds of TTPs that will allow us to fight when we know we're going to be contested at EW. I think as we work through solutions, and I know obviously this was a big deal in the Ranger Regiment for dismounted formations, we got to make sure that we don't provide one-off solutions that aren't integrated, from the soldier to the platform to the command post. So we're really working through to make sure that we optimize that, so soldiers don't have to kind of switch gears depending on where they operate. Now we want to make sure that we can kind of keep it simple, intuitive, to make sure decision-making tools are constantly evolving, to make that always factor in, take the burden off the cognitive, overload of the soldier, and put it in, behind what some folks would call behind the faceplate or higher on echelon. So take the complexity out of the, off the X, if that makes sense. And we're really trying to get after, I had mentioned PACE plan before, primary alternate contingency and emergency. We're trying to leverage emerging technology that will allow that to be more automated and allow our networks to be more self-healing. When the adversary gets a vote, we want to make sure we don't get shut down. We want to make sure the network can be nimble enough to adjust, whether it switches spectrum or switches, routing schemas or whatever it takes to allow the network to be more resilient in a contested environment.
Sir, I understand the Army has signed a deal with SpaceX or Kreta to test Starlink. Can you tell us more about that and the Army's experimentation and investment in commercial SATCOM capabilities?
Yeah, so I mean, obviously SpaceX and the Starlink constellation that SpaceX leads and manages there is one of many, I think, space-based satellite providers. In partnership with the C5ISR Center here, which is part of Combat Capabilities Development Command, and we've signed a lot of CRADAs, or Cooperative Research and Development Agreements, with industry. SpaceX is just one of many, which allows the Army to explore opportunities and options and give us some ability to make sure that as a lab and as an Army, we can share threat data with emerging technologies, so we can leverage that technology and their state-of-the-art advancements to provide the Army capabilities we might be able to use. In commercial SATCOM, Starlink is one of the low Earth orbit space-based internet providers that we are exploring, and we're gonna see how it goes, and we're looking to leverage that capability among others, and it's one of many. We're also looking at other technologies that it's already been proven out. In when I was at CENTCOM as the J6, we were leveraging mid-Earth orbit satellite constellations to get high capacity, latency connectivity. Where we couldn't get terrestrial fiber in places in the Middle East, whether it's northern Iraq or Syria, that we had a heavy demand to exfil significant amounts of data. So we leveraged new constellations with different kind of capabilities, and that's what we're trying to do as a cross-functional team, is make sure we don't limit ourselves to geosynchronous only orbits where you've got less bandwidth, less capacity, more latency. We're trying to look for options. This is part of a resilient network with multiple options, and SpaceX Starlink is only one of the options we're looking at.
Sir, data has become an asset and a key part of future fights will be gaining inferences from that data faster than our adversaries can. What do you think are the future responsibilities of soldiers as we move to a more software-based network and more software-based army?
Yeah, so there's a lot packed into that question, but I will tell you, I think, you hear the term software-defined everything anymore. Software-defined networking, software-defined data centers, software-defined radios. I mean, software is really driving a lot of what we do, but there still has to be kind of a perfect mix of the right hardware, the right chassis, and the size, weight, and power definitely still matters. But how do we leverage data? How do we leverage artificial intelligence, machine learning, and cloud? And you pick a buzzword, how do we leverage all of that to enhance our speed of decision making? Because that's really what it's all about, is the ability to observe, orient, decide, and act, or the ability to integrate our sensors and integrate effects, whether that's a fires platform, a kinetic fires platform, or a non-kinetic effect that we want to deliver on some target. Leveraging that requires us to have kind of a data fabric. Requires us to leverage whether it's commercial cloud or military cloud or a hybrid cloud approach where it makes sense, so we can get everything containerized where it needs to be, and then optimize our edge computing. If you don't get the foundation set, artificial intelligence and machine learning will not be able to be leveraged in a way that we think we need it to be. And so some of that is very nascent as we speak, but there's a lot of hype around it right now. What we want to do is get the kind of that data foundation set, make sure our computing environment is established that's going to enable that. So when artificial intelligence capabilities emerge and the machine learning tools develop, that it's going to give our commanders and our soldiers and our systems an advantage. So things can be much more automated, whether it's, like I mentioned earlier, a self-healing network, or do we have more of a machine learning automated kill chain where a lot of the analytical work that now requires a human in the loop is being done, you know, machine to machine, and then the human becomes on the loop in order to kind of give it the go, no go, ethics based decision making for you know, pulling the trigger or generating an effect. And so all that is emerging right now, and it's part of our capability set design. And what we're trying to make sure is the network we deliver will enable it when it's ready for us to leverage things like AI and machine learning. And does that answer your question?
It does, yes, sir.
So we know that Orion Forge is coming online through the network CFT in the coming months. We look forward to that within the DevSecOps pipeline and that ecosystem that's going to create for the tactical edge. Can you explain a little bit more about what is going into that effort?
Yeah, so really Orion Forge is an environment we're trying to set. We're trying to capitalize on the DevSecOps capabilities that are already kind of going on. We've got some going on in PM Mission Command right now with our tactical server infrastructure and our command post computing environment. There's DevSecOps going on with the tactical assault kit effort going on in both PEO Soldier and as it relates to Mission Command. And there's work going on the DSIGS program inside PEO IEW. And there's work being done in the C5ISR Center here, you know, on the science and technology side. What Orion Forge is designed to do is pull together those efforts and drive convergence in our common operating environment, which is really LOE2. We're trying to optimize, again, it's about the speed of decision-making, it's about the sensor-to-shooter mission thread, and what we're gonna focus on is some specific use cases to reduce the time it takes to integrate sensors and integrate effects. And so Orion Forge is designed to pull the team of teams together in a common DevSecOps environment, and you get that feedback loop. And it's gonna be a primary driver to where the Army's trying to go with this convergence objectives. So it's in direct support of supporting General Murray, where he's trying to go with Army Futures Command across the all the CFTs. We've got key stakeholders on the intel side, on the operational side, helping make Orion Forge a success. What we've got to do is really get the environment set and then focus on a cycle of really a sprint cycle approach and making sure that we manage kind of what we're trying to get after. And the primary focus is going to be getting after our convergence objectives in the common operating environment with specific emphasis on sensor to shooter.
That's a great answer, sir. And just wrapping up, a few final questions, just quick hitters. Why does what the network CFT doing right now, why does it matter to the soldier on the ground?
We're trying to make the soldier capable of winning against a peer adversary. We want to give them the capability and the tools they need to make decisions at speed. When all hell's breaking loose around them and the world is totally chaotic and violent, it's either blistering hot or freezing cold. We want to make sure that the network we deliver allows them to connect and make decisions, and they don't have to worry about reconfiguration on echelon, that a lot of that stuff will do it for them. We're trying to give them an opportunity to win, because as General McConville says, winning matters and people first. And it's about that soldier in the fight, that soldier going through the breach, that soldier in the thick of things. We want to give them a network that's going to enable them to win. That's really what it boils down to.
That's awesome. And sir, I think for us, that's really completes the questions we had. So I'll turn it over to you, unless James, you got anything?
Yeah, I just want to thank you guys for the opportunity. I mean, obviously there's a rich history and legacy of the 75th Ranger Regiment. I've had, you know, I've never served in the regiment myself, but I've served shoulder to shoulder with Rangers along the way. And I will tell you, Rangers always do lead the way. They've been great teammates, and the support that, you know, the Army can provide to enable your success. And, you know, we're all about that. I think we can learn from you. As I mentioned, Abrams Charter before, there's a lot we can learn from Rangers in the fight and the feedback you provide. So I want to keep the lines of communication open and just know that we, the Army Network Cross-Functional Team, we're all about finding a way to make a difference and getting capability in the hands of our soldiers. And if there's anything that the 75th Ranger Regiment can provide in terms of feedback or technology or shared understanding, we want to make sure we maintain this relationship. So thank you very much.
Sir, on behalf of the 75th Ranger Regiment, I do want to say thank you for your time, and we as well look forward to working with you.
This recording and any information or material placed on this podcast, including advice and opinions, are the views and responsibilities of those making the comments and do not represent the views of the Department of Defense, the United States government, or its third-party service providers. Thank you.